Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Tuesday, January 31st, 2023, Season 9 of ATL, kicking off. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson-Smith and our producer, Christian Ryan. Good to be back in the saddle. Good to be back recording. We took a little break, had a little time to rest and recover, but Ben, the ninth season of ATL is upon us.
Season 9, that's pretty wild. I mean, 9 in the podcast world, like, that's an old podcast. This is not like the fresh new podcast anymore. But yeah, super excited to be back. And, you know, hopefully you've had the chance to rest up a little bit. The season's obviously pretty busy, but really excited for the 2023 season and what that's going to bring for the Jays and Major League Baseball. I mean, it's creeping up on us pretty quickly here.
We want to take just a rare moment just to talk about the podcast off the top, what we want to do this season, our goals, what we've been up to, etc. We're going to get into the Jays. We're going to get into their off season. We're going to do probably about 50 episodes this year of that, and we're going to talk plenty of Jays in this episode. If you don't want to hear us talk about ATL and you don't want to hear us talk about like what's coming up this year, it'll be time stamped in the description. Just go ahead, find that timestamp and skip ahead to when the
our feelings won't be hurt.
Yeah, no, not at all. Just skip ahead to when the hardcore baseball talk starts and you will get what you want. But we do want to kind of reset things a little bit here in season 9, because I don't know, maybe we don't do this enough, Ben. Like, maybe we don't kind of talk about our thoughts on the podcast and our goals and kind of where we're at physically and mentally as we begin another season, our ninth doing ATL. So where are you at right now? How are you feeling coming off of the off season? What have you been up to? Take me inside your headspace as we sit here right now, about to begin February and spring training about 2 weeks away.
Yeah, well, I do think that it's good to do this periodically, and I do think you're probably right that we haven't done this enough, because, you know, I have a ton of thoughts on podcasting, on sports media, on what it means to create content. And this is not about to become a podcast about podcasting. We are not about to become sports media critics. That's not what's happening here. Don't worry. We'll get to who's out of options. We'll get to who's a super two. All of that is still coming up. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's worth maybe pulling back the curtain a little bit more in some ways with this episode and then heading into this season. I think that, yeah, for me, the off seasons, you know, it can be busy at times. There's GM meetings, there's winter meetings, but you know, and I'm sure that you can relate to this. In fact, I know you can for a fact, but just like lifestyle wise, it definitely does. It slows down in a way that's like actually really necessary and really nice, because, you know, otherwise it's a lot easier to find time to like go to the dentist or, you know, eat healthy in the course of the off season than it is in the course of, you know, 162 games and 180 days. So it's been great. Feel recharged, feel ready for the season. So really excited for it, but definitely, and you know, last off season was so different too, because it was the lockout, and before that it was COVID. Feels like the first normal off season in a while, and it was great on this end to have a real pause.
It was absolutely the first normal off season in a while, and like, this is a much bigger thought, and we're not going to get into this right now because I don't even know how I feel about it, but I do think that like the pandemic has impacted everyone's psyche and has altered everyone's brain in a way that we're not even beginning to understand, and we are not even going to reckon with for quite some time until we get far past it. And it's probably still occurring, but the last few years I did not off season well. Like, I did not do a good job in the off season of resting, like you said, of recovering, of pulling back, of taking that time to really slow down. And it's like anything, right? It's like anything that you do physically or mentally. You work hard for a really long time, and then you have to rest. Because if you don't rest, you're not going to grow. If you just stay on the hamster wheel and you just stay on the treadmill at all times, you can't progress and you can't get better and you can't really take stock of how your life is set up and where your mindset is at and the things that you need to attend to. So this past off season, as you said, one of the first normal one we've had in a while, was great for me just in terms of addressing like some health stuff that I really needed to get a handle of that I'd been putting off for a long time. I think that mentally I'm in a much better place right now than I was when I ended the 2022 season. I think that I learned a lot this offseason about working smarter rather than harder. I think a lot of prior off seasons, just due to my own anxiety and just due to just the way I am wired, I would just try to dive into something else. I would immediately be like, all right, let's get into the Raptors every day,
right,
and covering them. Let me just put up my hand to do a bunch of really ambitious features that I don't even really have the bandwidth to take on right now. What can I do next? What can I do next? Why am I not doing enough? And I don't know that that was the healthiest way to approach an off season after last year that I think, you know, for both of us was probably the most grueling and grinding of a season that we've had in a while. And the first time that we were like back on the road and back had a long, you know, had a full 162 where we were at a ballpark pretty much every day and we were out of the Zoom world and getting back into, you know, interacting with people in the real world again. I mean, there was a lot of demands and it was really taxing. So it was really important for me to just kind of reset and pull out and take that rest and take that chance to recover and figure out how I'm going to really off season in the years ahead as well.
Well, that, first of all, it's good to hear. And I think, you know, secondly, it's almost to bring it back to baseball a little bit here. Like it almost is like if you're a pitcher who's hauling, you know, whatever it is, 200 innings in the course of a season, then you're probably not going to want to go to winter ball. You're probably not going to want to go and like pitch, you know, in Venezuela and throw another like 50 innings and then show up to like, you know, mini camp in January and then roll right into spring training. There's probably something to be said for the 200 inning starters such as yourself for, you know, taking a little bit of a pause. Maybe you go to Driveline. The, you know, writer or podcaster equivalent of that is, you know, honestly for me, like I actually in the off season, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to this, but I really enjoy in the off season having the chance to consume content that's outside of the baseball world. Because in the season, I am like so thirsty for information. I'm like trying to consume basically any sort of baseball podcast I can. That's where I like to listen. So I get a lot of my info through podcasts, you know, whether it's fantasy podcasts, whether it's, you know, discussions with, you know, interviews, Jay's podcast, of course, trying to consume as much as I can. But it leads to a very similar type of content that I'm consuming all the time. And now I find myself just reading a lot more opinion articles that have nothing to do with baseball, reading books that have nothing to do with baseball, not reading as much as I would like, but, you know, consuming podcasts that have nothing to do with baseball. And then you come back and it's like, all right, of course, we're going to have laser focus on the Jays. Of course, that's going to happen. We're still going to do those things. But having the chance, I think, to just reset a little bit is really useful.
And yeah, I mean, just getting to really take in content from other spheres is huge. And it's something that you don't get the opportunity to do that much in the regular season. Because you think about it, every night you got a Blue Jays game that you're locked in on for 3.5 hours or whatever it is, and all the work that we do before and after a game. And then the next morning I get up and I'm like, all right, let's see what else happened around the league. Because I didn't have time to really lock in on what was going on in the NL West or wherever else, right? Let's see who got hurt. Let's see who had a good pitching performance. Let's see who's hot. Like, let's see which teams are streaking and which teams are maybe not doing so well and could be surprise sellers come the trade deadline. Like, just kind of staying up on all that stuff because you need a global perspective, I think. If you cover this sport, you don't want to be just completely singularly focused on only your team because, like, then you are just looking at a tree in the forest, and that all takes time, and it could be hard to really expand your horizons in a season without consuming it can be.
Yeah, and you know, to some extent I miss it because to some extent, like, those days are fun when, you know, you have, you know, whatever it is, a Friday and it's a new series starting and there's kind of the anticipation, Jays are in town, like that's always a good time. But then, like you said, when you think about it, in our cases, a lot of the time we're on one of the pregame shows, whether it's for Blue Jays Central or whether it's radio, Fan 590, whatever the case. Then there's the game. Okay, you're locked in on the game. Then I'll often listen to the postgame show, Blair and Barker, you know, Show Ali co-hosting in there sometimes. I like to consume that so I know what's being said. And then, of course, you're on Twitter, you're on social media, you wake up the next day, you're doing it all again. So it's like, it really is this hamster wheel that doesn't stop. We're part of that mechanism. We're you know, fortunate to be part of that mechanism. And it's a fun experience, but it's also like, it can create this sort of really, this sort of tunnel vision that you need to create that space and separation from.
Yeah, no, wouldn't trade it for anything. Love it. Like, it's an incredible, unbelievable job. And I am feeling really like excited and eager to get the 2023 season going. Like, I can't wait for it to start. I think that both of us have like some really cool things coming up in our roles with Sportsnet covering this team this year. I think it's going to be a really, really exciting and strong and fun year all around. And I'm super eager to get started. And I think that I've gotten there is huge. Because at the end of 2022, I mean, long season covering the Jays, 7-8 months, whatever it was. And then I went straight off to do the postseason. I covered the NL side of the postseason for TV. So like, I was pretty burnt out by the end of that. It was a lot. So it like just takes some time to kind of turn that around. And so like, maybe we could talk about the podcast a little bit as well. Like, I think it's important as well to just step away from the podcast for a little bit and to take a little bit of a break. And like, thank you to everyone who reached out, whether it's Twitter, email, in person, whatever. Like, honestly, heard from someone somewhere every day. When is the podcast coming back? When's the next ATL? Guys, the Jays signed someone. We need an episode. Guys, it's been a long time. Guys, a lot's happened. Guys, you got to come back. We appreciate that. Like, that's huge. Like, I don't appreciate enough like how large and invested our audience is, because I really don't interact with the numbers during the year. And then at the end of the year, we have a meeting with Amal Delic, who runs the podcast at Sportsnet, and he gives us all these numbers. And every year I'm like, holy crap, like that many people listen to this. I just never even think about it, and I don't realize it. And it's probably a good thing that I don't think about it during the year, but it's really, really meaningful. And it's really important. It really like means a lot to me. I know it means a lot to you. And we want to be there for people throughout the regular season. And we are. We want to be there for people throughout spring training, throughout the postseason. We want to be doing more. But I also would never want ATL to become like a quantity over quality thing. And I think that part of maintaining the quality of the podcast, which is why I think a lot of people are as into it as they are, is taking a little break in the off season to recharge and reset and come back anew with some real like goals in mind for an upcoming season.
Just took the Chad Green signing to push us over the edge. We're just waiting for that. None of the other moves were big enough. You know, Kiermaier, Bassett, now Varsho, Chad Green. All right, we'll do a podcast. But yeah, I think 100% agree with that. I mean, our audience is really big. I mean, yeah, hundreds of thousands of downloads in the course of the year. And we're really happy that so many people choose to spend their time with us. Definitely not something that we would take lightly at all, because there's a ton of great podcasts and great content out there. So really appreciate everyone for sticking with us. And, you know, as you were kind of hinting at there, Arden, as we start to look ahead for 2023, I think that first of all, the team's going to be good. So that's, you know, makes things a lot more interesting than like the 2018-19 version of the Toronto Blue Jays. But, you know, I think that even beyond that, there are ways that, you know, you and I have talked about as far as making this content really interesting and different and pulling back the curtain a little bit to, you know, not as far as like, I never want this to become like so navel-gazy that it's like, hey, you know, my flight was delayed and I'm, you know, basically like rage podcasting about some airline that, you know, did me wrong. That's not where we're going here. But it's more, there's a lot of questions that I get, and I'm sure you get them too, just about what it's like to be around the team, what it's like for these players, what it's like for these coaches or front office officials as they go through the grind of 162 game season, the whole experience of that for them, for you and me, and in our roles that we have, you know, those little questions and those little insights that we have, I think can add color and add context to what it means to be around this team. So I hope to share some of that stuff in the course of this season.
I was just talking to a Blue Jay about that a few weeks ago, about how like, man, I wish I could relate better the grind of a regular season and what you guys go through. And I try to, but I don't know if you're not up close to it, at least like we are observing it. And certainly, you know, for players and coaches and support staff who don't get mentioned enough, but also are literally living it, it's really hard to relate to people how challenging it is and how much it changes you as a person and how different you are at the end of those 8 months than you are at the beginning of it. Like, it really, so I agree with you. I would like to bring fans behind those scenes a bit more this year. I would like to use our position as being like essentially like embedded with the team throughout the year to kind of help pull back that curtain and to help show fans that side of it. Because like, look, you're going to get our reaction to Chad Green signing and to Brandon Belt signing and to the whatever injury is going to come up and whoever's going to slump in the time that the Yankees and Orioles are going to, you know, have benches clearing incidents with the Blue Jays at some point this year, right? Like, you're going to get our reaction to all that stuff. But I do think we can also like take the podcast a bit further and make it very unique and interesting and must listen by giving fans like that behind the scenes perspective that you know, you can really only get by being in the clubhouse every day gleaning it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, first of all, you know, when you say the differences beginning of the year to the end of the year, like, players experience that to a huge, huge extent. I mean, we're kind of talking about that too for ourselves. You know, like, it's easier for me to be in good shape mentally and physically in February than it is at the end of September. It's also true for the players. They show the best shape of your life thing. Like, that happens for a reason. It's because they've had the chance to rest and build up as well. By the end of the year, these guys lose like 10, 15 pounds sometimes. Like, that's pretty common. So that's one thing. And yeah, like, I'm really excited to kind of answer some of these questions that, you know, I've heard over the years, whether it's, you know, with spring training, for example, do players get bored of it? It's really long. It's 7 weeks. Yeah, they get bored. You know, when do they eat? When do they show up to the ballpark? Do they read Arden's articles? Do they find it stressful to be, you know, in the spotlight in the way that they are? Like, these are questions that I'm not saying I have the answers to every single one of them, but I'm sure we can send people in those directions. And they're questions you honestly can't really Google. I get asked them a lot. I think that it's kind of fun to talk about those. You know, if it's, and without, you know, telling tales out of school here, but I think there are ways to convey what that experience is like for the people around the team.
It's funny with the weight loss thing for players. It's kind of the opposite, or at least not, I'm not gonna say for us, for me it's the opposite during the regular season, and I'm feeling good that I have shed the 8 pounds that I gained last year during the regular season, and like, my training in the gym has gone from like just getting into a hotel gym and trying to just maintain what I had during the regular season, and then even having like weeks where it's like, man, I was not even able to do that much, to being really consistent with it in the off season, and then also experiencing what it's like to turn down the knob on stress and turn up the knobs on like sleep and nutrition and thing, like understanding how powerful that can be and what a difference those things can make. And then relating that to what ball players are telling us and what like Mark Shapiro is telling us with the facility in Dunedin and with the high performance department and resources that they're giving athletes and all the things that they do to help players manage that stress and manage their workouts and their bodies and their mental health throughout the season. Getting to experience that yourself really does help you understand how important that is for athletes.
Podcast wise, we are in mid-season form right now, just ready to go, ready to roll.
So as Ben was saying, like, we're going to hold each other accountable to help to bring some of that perspective. We would like you, the listeners, to also hold us accountable. Please hit us up with questions throughout the season. You don't have to wait for us to prompt you. You can hit us up on Twitter at Arden Zwelling, at B. Nicholson Smith. I have made a pledge to be more active on social media this year, and I am speaking that into existence right now. This, I've said it out loud. There's gonna be an Instagram post coming at some point. I'm not gonna say when I'm gonna get get up the nerve to do it, but we're gonna start trying to show fans a bit more of a different side of ourselves, or I should just say of myself. I'm not gonna speak for you, Ben. You're already very active, I'm sure, on Instagram, but I'm going to try to kind of show more of myself to fans. It's something that I have resisted extremely stubbornly for a number of years, and it's time for it to end. So because it's dumb and it's not something that I should do, and there's no reason to fear it and to dread it. So I'm just like working out these thoughts aloud right now to hold myself accountable to do more of that. So as fans, please like send us questions, send us off topic questions. If you want to hear like non-baseball topics or like behind the scenes things yep. that you're interested in, ideas, like we'll take those. We're not going to spend entire podcasts doing what we just did. This is going to be the longest we talk about anything like this. But if there's like a 5-minute off-topic thing that we can get to 1 week, we think it's going to make the podcast better. We think it's going to keep us very engaged, keep us on our toes. And it's something that we kind of want to bring this year that maybe we haven't in prior.
You just gained like 36 new Instagram followers. And I bet hundreds of people were like, what? Arden's on Instagram? So watch out. It's a new era, folks. It's happening right here.
Anything you want to add?
Just the appreciation for the listeners, who many of whom have listened for years, some of whom obviously are new listeners. I know that new listeners join us every year. So if this is your first episode listening, welcome. Really excited for a big year, a big start to the year anyway. We'll see what happens with the Jays themselves, whether they live up to their potential or not. But this is a really good team and it should be a really interesting season.
At the letters at sportsnet.ca. That's the other thing that I forgot. Email us. Going to be active on responding to emails this year. Holding ourselves accountable here, Ben. Speaking it all into existence. At the letters at sportsnet.ca. Email us literally anytime. We will get back to you. Want to use more emails on the podcast. And yeah, like I would echo what Ben said. Huge thank you to you, to the listeners. Like it means the world to us. Like I am so appreciative of the audience that we have built over 8 years. I think last year we released 48 episodes. Wow. I think Amal was saying it's like high 40s, low 50s. That's kind of been what we've done the last, few seasons. And we're going to keep that volume up. Like we're going to keep that going. We hope that fans feel well served by that volume. And we hope that we are delivering a consistently high quality product at that volume as well for everyone throughout the season. Those are the goals for the pod in season 9.
Yeah, well, we will certainly have a lot to talk about. I think that's pretty clear the way things are shaping up.
Okay, pod discussion, navel gazing is done. After this, we're gonna get into the Blue Jays off season, some assorted thoughts that Ben and I have been collecting over the last few weeks that we have been on hiatus. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producer is Christian Ryan. Ben, every team is different every year. Like in baseball, no team ever truly runs it back. And every team is actually different at the end of the season than they are at the beginning of the season. Like way more different than I think we actually give credence to. But how different do you think the Blue Jays are going to be in 2023 versus 2022? Like are these just your typical run-of-the-mill differences season to season? Or do you think that we are going to see an actually like dramatically different brand and style of baseball from this club?
Honestly, I think the brand and style will be somewhat different, like noticeably different. When you pair it with the fence, the changes to the ballpark, the changes to the outfield, I mean, this could really be a different feel to this team. I think the end result is probably going to be pretty similar. They were a really good team last year. Also in 2021, great team, just missed the playoffs that year. I think they're a similar caliber of team where they're not in Major League Baseball's elite. They're not the Dodgers. They're not Atlanta or the New York Mets or the Houston Astros, but they're right behind that group. I think that they could push into that group this year if a few things go well and they could emerge as a powerhouse team. I think as things stand now, they're a very, very good team, definitely a playoff team, definitely one of the top 10 teams in Major League Baseball. So the way that they get there, though, to answer your question, I think is going to feel a bit different because it's going to be more left-handed and the defense in the outfield will be better than it was before.
I do think that the games will be a little bit different. I think there will be fewer slugfests. I think that the Blue Jays are going to prevent runs better than they have in recent years, but I also don't think they are going to score runs as voluminously as they have in recent years. I think that instead of like the 7-5, 8-6 games, you're going to see like the 4-2, 5-3 games. And that may not seem like that big of a deal, but it is going to put a lot of pressure on this team to pitch well, to defend well, to base run well, and to be very concentrated and focused and locked in. And I feel like the Blue Jays have made some real strides there. Certainly in outfield defense, you're running out three center fielders in the outfield on any given day, and Varsho, Kiermaier, and Springer. That's going to be important with different dimensions and with some of the pitchers on this pitching staff that allow a fair amount of contact. When you think about a Bassett, or even like a Berríos has given up a good amount of fly ball contact as well. Alec Manoah gives up a bunch of contact, so that's going to be really important. I think base running is an area where the Blue Jays are going to be a lot better, and where they're going to try to exploit the opposition a lot more, taking the extra base, being aggressive, putting plays on. We know John Schneider likes to manage that type of baseball. And I think that by adding like a Kiermaier and a Varsho, the Blue Jays have actually made themselves like a much more dynamic team in terms of speed and what they can do. Like, you think about the guys, the playing time they will replace. When you look at Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., like, great athletes, certainly. And for Hernandez, at least, like, pretty good speed, but not great instincts on the base paths. Not great at sort of converting those tools into making an impact with their base running. So I do expect the Blue Jays to be more crafty and cunning, running on outfielders, second to third, third to home on those sort of margin calls. Like, those really in-game, that decision-making is huge. And then there's also the focus element, and there's just the, like, minding your P's and Q's, and this is the end of a long road trip, and we played a bunch of games in a row, and I am fatigued mentally and physically, and I need to find a way in the field to be locked in, and to not let a ball get under my glove, and to know my clock on the infield with the runner from home to first and how much time I have. I need to know where I am sending this ball from the outfield, which cutoff man I'm hitting, when I can make an attempt at throwing a guy out on the base pass. Like, things like that, pitch execution, game calling, holding runners on, like all those little things, I think that's going to be really important. I think the Blue Jays brought in a lot of individuals who do that at a very high level and a very consistent level when you think about guys like Kiermaier, Varsho, and Bassett.
Yeah, and we'll start really learning a lot more about the feel of this team pretty soon. Like, it is kind of wild how soon spring is, first of all. And then it will also be the first camp that John Schneider will be running as the manager of this team, because this time last year, it still was Charlie Montoyo, and now it's John Schneider. Don Mattingly is in as the team's bench coach. I don't think I forget what the sequence was, whether we've discussed that or not. But, you know, this will be a different leadership group on the field for the Blue Jays, with the manager and the bench coach having turned over since 2022. So, you know, we don't know exactly what form that'll take, but I do remember before the playoff series against the Mariners, Schneider was out there really encouraging the pitchers as they were going through a round of PFP. And you're not going to do that every single series. If you're in Texas in July or in Kansas City in August, you're going to pick your spots and make sure that you're not overexerting guys. But I do think that there will be an attention to detail that's really emphasized. And this team is still going to make mistakes because they're human beings and they play 162 games. And so it's not going to be perfect baseball. But I do think that we'll see a team that attempts to cut down on those mistakes where possible.
I should add Whit Merrifield to that list as well, as a guy who brings a ton of intensity, a guy who is very difficult to play against. A guy who's a very underrated and instinctual base runner, in my opinion. Remember the slide into home against Gary Sanchez, that game against the Twins down the stretch last year, right? When Merrifield actually contorted his slide to exploit the rules, like based on something that he had picked up earlier in the game off of Sanchez, and making that decision on the fly and making that play like in real time is very, very difficult. And Whit Merrifield like was just on point with that. So I should sort of add him to that.
Deep. Here's the catch. Here comes Merrifield out at the plate. Will the Blue Jays challenge? Merrifield is arguing. John Schneider's got his hand up, and the Blue Jays want to have a look.
There was a violation by the catcher. The runner is safe.
Marco Baldelli is livid.
He gets at the versatility that the Blue Jays are going to have this year that maybe they haven't had quite as much in recent years. The Blue Jays have been trying to build out this versatility for seasons now. Ross Atkins and the Blue Jays front office group have been talking about like wanting more flexibility and more versatility in terms of the lineups that they can construct and the defenses that they can deploy for seasons and seasons and seasons. I feel like they're kind of getting close to that now. They're obviously going to be more left-handed this year. Varsho, Kiermaier, Brandon Belt. But there's also going to be like a deeper slate of bench options for John Schneider, depending on what the opposition does, depending on who's starting, depending on how the Blue Jays want to match up against the action of the pitches of the starter who's on the hill against them, whether they're a righty or a lefty, and swing planes, what parts of the zone certain hitters like to attack. Like, I think there's a better blend of types and styles of hitters on this club. And you think about it, any given night, you are probably going to have at least two of Whit Merrifield, Santiago Espinal, or Kevin Biggio on your bench, essentially, yep. If everybody's healthy and playing. That gives you a lot more options late in the game. Plus one of Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk, likely.
Could
if,
be.
Right? If one of those guys isn't DHing. So now John Schneider just has better pinch hit options, better pinch run options, more defensively versatile options, guys who can move around to a bunch of different spots. I think the Blue Jays can be a much more dynamic team this year, not only in how they fill out their lineup to start games, but also in how they finish them.
For sure. And I think, you know, the goal number one for this team has to be just to get through spring healthy, because, you know, the last thing you want is, oh, something goes wrong the last week and all of a sudden Vinny Capra's here, you know, in the lineup all the time. And it's just not the way things are designed, of course. But as things stand now, they're in a good spot. The bench looks good. I agree with you that there's more versatility. There are more ways that they can deploy this bench. And on paper, as we sit here now, this is a team that looks really good. I think there's still probably a couple ways to improve it, whether that's internally or whether that's from someone who's not currently in the organization. You look at that number five rotation spot right now, Yusei Kikuchi and Mitch White. You know, Kikuchi, everyone listening here knows the question there and what he was not able to do for the Blue Jays in 2022. So that remains a question as we enter the next season for Kikuchi. And Mitch White, I mean, he has promised, but, you know, he didn't really take the opportunity that was given to him and prove that he is a clear major league starter. He's obviously a major league pitcher, someone who can be used in some capacity on a major league staff, but it's not clear that he's a major league starting pitcher. So that is a question at the back of that rotation. And there probably is room, ironically enough, after so much talk about getting more left-handed, to add a bench piece that's more right-handed. And there's one bench spot right now that's unaccounted for that you could use a switch hitter or right-handed hitter.
Yeah, Nathan Lucas probably projects to be there. Right now, maybe Otto Lopez, kind of depends on how you want to construct your roster. But yeah, that's definitely a place where the Blue Jays could upgrade so that you've got Lucas and Lopez at AAA. And those are the guys that you were calling on during the season. I agree with you. I think there is always room for more pitching and more depth starters. This is one of the reasons why I really like the Zach Thompson move that kind of flew under the radar.
True.
A little bit. But this is a guy who, I mean, he's only a season removed from a really strong 2021. Like, he was one of those many Miami Marlins who are now with the Blue Jays, like Anthony Bass, Garcia, Zach Pop, Adam Simber, all these guys who were on that team. And he's now joined the Blue Jays in a deal with Chavez Young going the other way. He's still got some very real big league stuff. If you look into his cutter and that pitch, which was not very effective for him in 2022, but go back to 21 and the way that he was using it and how effective it was and some of the characteristics and traits with that pitch, there's a lot of intrigue there for me, man. I think there's a lot of upside if the Blue Jays can help him rediscover what he was doing in 2021. Like, he's got a cutter that, and I'm not going to get into like explaining what seam shifted wake is, but it creates a very, like, his cutter creates a very sort of complex phenomenon with how the seams of the baseball impact its movement, and it gets a ton of late life because of that. And it is very unusual and unique to other cutters that hitters are used to seeing. So hitters that recognize cutter in those first 2/10 of a second that it is thrown and then execute their swing to where they expect a cutter to end up, Zach Thompson's cutter does not end up there. And he mixes that with like a super high spin fastball that's staying up and a sinker that's going down and a changeup with a ton of movement. He's got a curveball. I mean, he's got a really good repertoire and a lot of tools to use. So he's obviously got to figure some stuff out because 2022 didn't go the way that he wanted it to, obviously. But if the Blue Jays can get him back on track, he's got 3 minor league options remaining. He's on the 40 now. He's obviously already made his big league debut. Like, this is exactly the kind of guy who could come up and make a spot start. If you've got an injury in your rotation, or you say Kikuchi is like, you are going to the bullpen, man, because this is not working out as a starter, or Mitch White's going through some stuff or whatever, Zach Thompson can fill in and give you a big league outing. I think he's got a better chance of doing that than some of the other sort of non-roster invitees that the Blue Jays are bringing in this spring. And if he's not doing that, he could be that guy who comes up and like saves the bullpen at the end of a really long trip when guys are taxed and someone else is hurt and someone's arm is barking and Jordan Romano is unavailable because he's pitched 3 days in a row. So you use those 5 options that you have on a guy like Zach Thompson and you bring him up and he comes out of your bullpen to like cover 3 innings. That can really save a team at a tough spot in a season. So I really, really like that pitch, that pickup for a lot of reasons.
2-2. And he strikes him out. 1-2-3 for Zach Thompson.
And he's looking good.
He's punched out 4 Brewers.
Yeah, really low key. I think when talking about the Jays offseason, like, all, you know, full disclosure, I could have gone the entire podcast without even mentioning him. And that's not because he's not important. Like, it's just he's easy to overlook. But you're right. And, you know, when they did acquire him, looking at the numbers, it's like this guy really could be a major league contributor. In fact, it would be more surprising if he doesn't contribute at some point this coming season. So he's definitely a name to keep an eye on, Thompson, for the Jays. And it's funny too. I mean, I don't think this is on purpose by any stretch, but you know, you hear the Jays talk about, we really want to replicate what the Astros are doing with the Rays or the Dodgers. You know, those are the kind of model franchise in Major League Baseball. Rarely do you hear that about the Miami Marlins, but they do happen to have, you know, quite a few ex-Marlins, including Don Mattingly on their staff.
Yeah, no kidding. They've really rebuilt a lot of that team. I love the Chad Green move as well that the Blue Jays made here, like mere moments before we started recording here on Tuesday, January the 31st. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery. We don't know yet where he's at in his recovery, but I would not be expecting to see him on a mound until the back half of the season. But you were talking about a guy who, prior to undergoing Tommy John surgery, was very durable, very effective, strikeout rate up over 30% over the 3 seasons prior to surgery, a low ERA. Like, there's a ton of upside here for the price that the Blue Jays are committing to, which is $8.5 million over 2 years with like a very unique and creative option structure. Like, this is the kind of guy, if he comes back from Tommy John and looks like himself, that the Blue Jays are going to be looking to trade for at the deadline. Like, this is who the Blue Jays are going to be looking to add at the end of July and in early August as they load up for the postseason. So why not get that guy now? And it doesn't only fill that need and help you win later this year, but in future seasons as well, because we know all about the volatility of relievers. Like, you can't just, like, you know, pencil in like Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson to just continue to be as good as they have been. Bad things are gonna happen to guys who you're expecting to be good. And you've also got Jimmy Garcia and Anthony Bass hitting free agency, or I think there might be an option on Garcia, but like, you know, you've still got holes to fill and you still want to keep building in this bullpen, and you can never have enough depth. And the position the Blue Jays were in prior to the Green deal was like really counting on someone from within whether that's Hayden Younger, whether that's Yosfer Zulueta, like, you know, whether that's Hagen Dan or whoever, somebody emerging to be a legit late game weapon for them, because they're going to need somebody later this season, or going out and acquiring that someone. And we saw at the prior deadline last year, the Blue Jays tried to do that and weren't able to find either deals that they like or teams that were willing to move the players that they were after. So I like the Chad Green deal for all those reasons and more.
Yeah, I think it's a great deal. It's really simple, really, you know, modest in scale, right? $8.5 million guarantee in the context of Major League Baseball, modest guarantee, relatively low risk here. And as you said, if he's able to recover, his Tommy John was June of 2022, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So then, yeah, midseason in 2023, he's poised to return and exactly give the Blue Jays that kind of high leverage reliever. And this is not like a, hey, he could be good. When Chad Green has been in the major leagues and he has, you know, what is it? He's got 7 years of major league experience, still only 31 years old, and his career strikeout rate is 32.5%. So way better than average. Your average strikeout rate for pitchers in Major League Baseball is about 22%. So he's well, well above average, way better than average at getting swings and misses. And that's incredibly valuable late in games. So I think that's a great pickup. And then you see where it goes. I mean, if he's really effective in the second half of the season, he's a big part of your playoff plans. If that all goes well, then the Jays are obviously exercising his option, which is, you know, there's some complicated options that we don't have to get into the full details of here, but they would exercise that option if he performs up to his capability. And then you have a piece moving forward. But really, in the meantime, they're going to have to figure things out for the first few months. And then there's a high likelihood that he can help them out in a really meaningful way for the second half.
Yeah, the Blue Jays do have a $5 million club option on Jimmy Garcia just for 2024, just to get that on the record. But this does also help them plan for 24 as well, right? This is managing like the near term and the long term as well. Like, I just think it's really smart front officing. And I think as a Jays fan, you have to be really encouraged that the Blue Jays are still here at the end of January, early February, spending money and still making the roster better and continuing to increase payroll. Like, we are already going to see the Blue Jays be a luxury tax team this year for the first time in franchise history. Like, they are going to run a record high by a mile in terms of payroll. Like, we'll see where it ends up. And it's always tricky too, because, you know, the Blue Jays might end up somewhere like 220 million, like pure payroll, but then their luxury tax bill will look like 250 or something like that when you factor in benefits and pre-arb pool and all that stuff. Either way, we're talking franchise record. We're talking paying into the tax for the first time and like paying a 20% penalty on the first $20 million past that first luxury tax threshold, the $233 million. And then we'll see if they even get into the next tier if they keep adding. Who knows? It creates all kinds of like interesting questions going ahead as to whether the Blue Jays maintain this level of spending, this level of payroll into 24 and beyond, because your tax penalties increase as time goes on. So like next year, they would have to pay 30% on any overages. And if they cross the line for a third consecutive season, they'd have to pay 50% on any overages. So it's just going to be really interesting to see what this means, not only this year, but going forward. And just to put this out there, by the way, the Blue Jays should be running a high payroll, as all teams should. The Blue Jays, like, they have very successful ownership and clearly very committed ownership. And oh, by the way, every MLB club got like a, you know, $30 million check from the BAMTech sale this offseason, and $65 million from the streaming rights last year. And there's tons and tons of money in the game. Every team should be spending. Nobody should be crying poor like Cincinnati or Oakland or Pittsburgh or whatever. But I think as Blue Jays fans, you just have to be encouraged with a win now club that should be making win now moves, doing that and putting their money where the mouth is.
Yeah, exactly. And they're doing it in big ways and small ways. I mean, we've talked about their recent history over the last few off seasons of signing $20 million players, going back to Ryu and then Springer and Semien, Gausman, and this offseason, Chris Bassett, $20 million AAVs. So they are clearly not hesitating to spend on top free agents. They pursue these guys. Some of them they get, some of them they don't get. Some of them they have general you know, interest in the way that they did for Carlos Correa, for Xander Bogaerts this offseason. You know, it's not like they were necessarily, you know, runners up or like right there in there with the teams that got it, but there's interest there. And that's, you don't do that lightly. You're not going to do that if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates, because it's, you know, kind of insulting if there's no chance of follow through. But the Jays legitimately have interest in this top tier of players. And as they move ahead here, you know, as a team run by Mark Shapiro at the top of the baseball ops and business ops, you know, this is someone who plans things out very carefully. So it would be very, very surprising to me if Mark Shapiro was willing to go over this threshold for 2023. And then in 2024 and 2025, the last seasons when the Blue Jays know for a fact that they have Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero Jr., when they have a core around those guys that's also very strong, it would be very, very surprising to me if those resources somehow disappeared. So I think, you know, right now they're definitely in the midst of this window that they really want to take advantage of. Obviously, they want it to be sustainable. Who knows? Maybe they'll extend Vladdy or Bo. We'll get to that, obviously, as spring unfolds here. But, you know, this is a team that's right in the middle of a very intriguing period of time.
Yeah, I agree. It would be surprising to see the Blue Jays try to duck back under next year. And you even just kind of look at the construction of the roster at this point. Like, you do have substantial money coming off the books next winter. Like, Hyunjin Ryu's deal will be up. We'll see with Matt Chapman. Obviously, Belt, Kiermaier on one-year deals. But if those guys leave, there's going to be a lot of playing time vacated. And you're going to need to replace that because you're still trying to win next year. So if Matt Chapman goes out and has the year that he had last year, and, you know, if Brandon Belt gives you like 400 really good plate appearances this year, like you Kevin Kiermaier plays every day in center field or something close to it, if Anthony Bass leaves and he gives you like 60-70 innings out of your bullpen, someone's got to fill that time next year. So you're gonna have to go out and replace that if you're not creating something internally, if you're not developing internally. And that's been a shortcoming for the Blue Jays, especially on the pitching side in recent seasons. It's like a lack of internal development. That's why you're having to go out and like sign a Bassett. Yeah. That's why you're having to go out and splash money and spend money on your rotation free agency every year, is because you are not having enough guys outside of Alek Manoah being produced internally to give you that tasty, tasty surplus value that every team is looking for. And that in tandem with trading away a Gunnar Hoglund and a Simeon Woods Richardson and Austin Martin and Gabriel Moreno and Jordan Groshans. I mean, the Blue Jays have like dipped into their prospect capital like really substantially in recent years as well. So not really developing as well as I think that they need to, in tandem with using a lot of high upside prospects to acquire win now talent, has left the Blue Jays in this position where they're having to spend like this. So they're gonna have to continue spending like that if they are not developing more effectively, to say nothing of the like arbitration salaries that will continue to go up for guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette and Jordan Romano if they are not extended.
Yeah, Dalton Varsho. They got Alek Manoah. They got a lot of potentially expensive players. I mean, that's partly the product too of being a good team. You know, you look at the Oakland A's, and like, I don't have it in front of me, but I kind of doubt that they have a lot of big arbitration cases this year because they don't have a lot of great players who are putting up the big numbers that get you to ARBs. So this is partly like, it's such a great problem to have for major league teams. The Dodgers run a big payroll. The Mets run a big payroll. It's not everything, because you can be the Rays and you can kind of finesse your way through, get a Pete Fairbanks here and a Yandy Diaz there. And, you know, what the Rays do is incredible in many ways. But, man, it's just so much easier if you can spend. Like, you have so much more room for error. You can really bid for a tier of players that is not available to the Tampa Bay Rays. And that's really good, because you can keep your own guys like a Bo or a Vlad. I'm saying can, I'm not saying will, because we don't know that yet, but they can if they want to. They could keep those guys or one of them. And you can bid on Shohei Ohtani when he becomes a free agent again in 8 or 9 months. No, 12 months. Whenever it is that Shohei Ohtani becomes a free agent. And I don't think he's going to sign with the Toronto Blue Jays, but I think they'll make a pitch, because that's the kind of tier of player that you have access to.
Thank you.
Here's another thing that happens when you build your roster in that fashion. You get kind of old. The Blue Jays, I think, are an older team this year than people maybe realize because they've been so young for a while now. And they do still have guys like Alejandro Kirk and Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. who are extremely young. Dalton Varsho, very young as well. But they're also going to be relying in a big way on guys like George Springer and Brandon Belt and Whit Merrifield and Kevin Kiermaier. That's four regulars who are 33 or older. And Springer, Kiermaier, and Belt, those are three players whose 2022s ended with surgery to correct nagging injuries that they had been playing through for years. Belt, I mean, it's obvious he's had knee injuries for years. Prior to that, he had four concussions. He had multiple hand fractures. And like, yes, like that's acute stuff and not chronic stuff, but that is stuff that happened. Kevin Kiermaier has had a ton of IL stints. He appeared in just over 60% of Tampa Bay's games over the last seven seasons. So he's missed 40% of them, or nearly 40% of them, you know, hip, quad, wrist, knee, thumb, hand. George Springer, quad, elbow. I mean, you know, Blue Jays fans have been through it, even on the pitching side, right? Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi, these are all guys who are 32 or older. You look at the bullpen, Adam Simber, Jimmy Garcia, Anthony Bass, Tim Mesa. I mean, we're all talking, these are all 32 and over. I think that it's okay. Like, it's good to have experience, it's good to have a blend of some players who know how to win and who have been there before, along with younger guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, who play every day, and guys who are kind of in the middle, like Matt Chapman and Jose Berríos, who are kind of like right in the thick of their careers. But I think one thing Blue Jays fans should be prepared for this year is a lot of workload management and a lot of days off and a lot of strategic rest, and like, just get ready now for like the whinging during the season over, why is this guy getting a day off and why are they backing that guy off? Why are they skipping this start? Like, the Blue Jays are going to have to do this. Like, they're going to have to be very delicate and careful about how they manage workloads this year because they have a very old roster. Even Whit Merrifield, who was like the Iron Man of baseball for a number of years, missed time last year because he had this foot thing during the season. So I think the Blue Jays are just going to have to be very mindful about that this season. And I think the fans should be prepared for workload management to be a big topic throughout the summer.
Yeah. And that's in a good situation, right? The alternative is that it's someone's on the IL and Nathan Lucas is getting 350 plate appearances and Vinny Capra is starting 4 days a week. And that's, you know, that there are situations where guys can emerge and the Jays would really benefit if that can happen again, as it did with Espinal to a large extent in the last couple seasons. And he's emerged as a really useful major league player. Maybe it's a big bounce back from Kevin Biggio, who, you know, is a very good option against right-handed pitching, especially, and someone who, if he is playing second base, can certainly handle that position, probably ready for, you know, maybe a bit more of a enhanced role after a couple seasons where it hasn't gone exactly according to plan for him. But I think that's a great point about the age of this team and probably snuck up on this roster a little bit. Might surprise us once, you know, we start watching these games and we'll be reminded once they're on our screens every day or at the ballpark every day that this really is a team that's gotten a lot older. And with that, there's risk. There's obviously benefits too because they're experienced and skilled, but there's a risk.
One thing I wonder about is like how much pressure there's going to be on guys like Dalton Varsho and Brandon Belt to play regularly against left-handed pitching, because those aren't necessarily ideal matchups considering the numbers they've put up in their career. Like, this is an aside, but the Varsho deal is great. Like, I think that it's a great ad for the Blue Jays. This type of move they need to be making now. It's a tough price to stomach. I understand Gabriel Moreno is a really special athletic player, but like, Varsho is going to be a very meaningful piece for this team. But I also think that Dalton Varsho's offense is a lot more Grichukian than maybe people realize. Pretty high strikeout dude, low walk, very impressive power, but not great on base. A guy who creates a lot of barrels, right? It's going to hit a lot of homers, But there's also going to be a lot of chasing there, and there's going to be a lot of swinging strikes, and he is liable to have a month where he hits like 180. that could happen. He's liable to have like a 3-week span where the topic of discussion is, man, Dalton Varsho's in a real funk. And if the Blue Jays run into some tough lefties, I mean, Dalton Varsho had extreme splits last year. He did all of his damage in the power department against right-handed pitching, and really did not get on base at all against lefties. So just how much he's in the lineup against lefties is a consideration. Same thing for Brandon Belt, who will be helped this year by not being shifted as aggressively, but also has had his own struggles against left-handed pitching as well.
Yeah, I think with Belt, you don't want him in there against lefties, especially when you think about him physically. To me, he would play all the time against righties and basically not against lefties. And I haven't asked John Schneider about this because we haven't heard from him since the Jays acquired Belt. But that's basically how I would line it up. And then with Varsho, his defense makes it interesting because he's such a good defender that you can justify putting him out there even if the matchup isn't that forgiving. But at the same time, they do have the option of putting Whit Merrifield in the outfield and then using Santiago Espinal at second base. And Espinal is actually pretty good against lefties. So that's one way to do it, with Biggio on the bench in that scenario along with Varsho.
I will say this for Varsho. Last season against right-handed pitching, 121 weighted runs created plus. Against left-handed pitching, 52. 26 of his 27 homers came against right-handed pitching. So yeah, it's going to be and look, matchups in baseball these days, like lefty righty is barely a consideration anymore. It's pitch shapes, it's swing planes, it's the attack zones, it's all that stuff, right? But it is going to be an interesting thing. Brandon Belt season is going to be really interesting to watch, just see how much he's still got in the tank. He's been such a fascinating player throughout his career. Like, he was just in the worst possible situation as a lefty hitter at Oracle. it's just a terrible place to be. And he had this really polarizing career with San Francisco, I think, right? There were times when he criticized for his striking out too much, or he was, being too passive at the plate. He got like the Joey Votto criticism of walking too much, not hitting enough homers, even though the ballpark did him no favors. But I mean, you just look at some of the more advanced statistics that we have to analyze production, and it tells you that Brandon Belt, even when the counting stats and the traditional stuff wasn't there, still found a way to be a really productive part of a lineup and to not make outs and to really do really strong things for a batting order. And the other thing that kind of fascinates me about him is he's made really consistent adjustments throughout his career. He's really like kind of tailored his swing to his ballpark, to how pitchers are pitching him. Like, as the league has continued to adjust to him and to change the way that he's being attacked, he has changed back. Like, he went from crushing sinkers early in his career to, everybody started attacking him with high four seamers like when that kind of evolution happened in the last few years. So he got really good at hitting those pitches, and then everyone started throwing him breaking balls, and then he got really good at barreling breaking balls from right-handed pitching. Especially, he's a guy who, like, when he was getting shifted aggressively, would bunt against it regularly. He was like the one guy who like actually worked on that and made it part of his game, where if you're going to take away the third baseman, I'm just going to bunt the ball over there and take first base. So I'm kind of interested to see how that evolution continues and how those adjustments continue now that he's out of Oracle.
Bunts are back. Dalton Varsho, also a good bunter. Yeah. He likes to bunt down the first baseline for base hits. There's some great clips showing that off on Twitter and probably elsewhere. So the Jays are going to be a bunting team. Love this. Well, although I'm not even kidding when I say that, because I do love it. As a spectator, I think the bunts are incredibly entertaining. And two, if you're bunting for a base hit, that's great. If you can successfully bunt for a base hit, that's still a base hit. It doesn't matter. They're base hits. So sacrifice bunts, obviously out of vogue. Not a fan of those in most situations, nor major league managers, which is why we don't see them. But a bunt for a base hit, very encouraged by that.
Varsho is a guy who has legit 30 homer power, and he's liable to bunt pretty regularly. He bunted 14 times in 2022, reached base on 9 of them for singles. It's the second most.
That's great. You should do it more at that rate. That's amazing.
But for a guy with like his kind of power, like you don't see that from this brand of player because he's liable to leave the yard at any given time.
Bring back the bunts. This is awesome.
The other thing when it comes to Belt is he was the first guy I thought of when we saw the new Rogers Center outfield dimensions. Because if you've watched him in San Fran at all, this is a guy who does not hit ground balls very, very seldom. Like one of the lowest ground ball rates in baseball for years and years. All he does is just like golfs fly balls. He's got a pretty, actually probably a better like all fields approach than people give him credit for, but his power has all been pull side at Oracle, where it's really tough to like hit balls out. Here's what's happening at Rogers Center, right? The fence is coming in right center from 375 to 359 in right center field. So like that's going to be a pretty substantial adjustment. Since 2019, Brandon Belt has hit 20 balls to right field that traveled 359 feet or further and did not result in a home run. So wow. If he was playing with Rogers Center dimensions since 2019, he would have 20 more homers. And Brandon Belt, by the way, missed substantial time due to injury over that. It's not like he was getting 600 plate appearances a season, so he could have had many more than that. Like he was just such a terrible match for Oracle. I think that Brandon Belt is going to golf a bunch of towering fly balls into that visitor's bullpen in right center field. Like they're going to be like those North Korean missile tests that they fire straight up in the air and then they like splash down off the coast of Japan somewhere. Like he's just going to lob balls up there into right center field, and I think he could come away with a bunch of homers if he does that. He was the guy, like when I saw the dimensions, he was the first guy I thought of as Brandon Belt is going to be really, really benefited from that wall coming in right center.
Belt hits a high drive to right. Out of here. I'm going to say welcome back. How about that?
It's going to be really interesting for hitters and for pitchers in a different way. But I think Belt could definitely benefit. Somehow I just had this feeling that Vlad Jr. is going to hit a ton of homers at Rogers Center this year. Like I think, you know, he's probably due for a bit of a, if you want to call it, bounce back season anyways. I think he's going to have a really productive season that's hardly going out on a limb. But I think that even within Rogers Center, this is just a non-numerical hunch that I think Vlad Jr. is going to hit a ton of homers in Toronto this year. And then the other thing with the dimensions is like, you know, for relievers warming up in those bullpens, whether it's the Loaizagas or the Kenley Jansons or the Felix Bautistas down the right field line, that really is going to be interesting. And I hope that, it's going to be a scene down there. Hopefully Jays fans are, you know, walking that line appropriately between going right up to the line and not crossing it. But they're going to be right on top of those opposing relievers.
I think it's obviously going to be a benefit for guys like, you know, the lefties, right? Belt, Varsho, like Kevin Biggio is going to have a bunch more homers this year that were fly ball outs or warning track outs in previous seasons. The right-hander that I think of who I think is really going to benefit is actually Matt Chapman. If you look at, because, and I was obviously looking this stuff up, balls hit 359 feet or further to right field since 2019 on the Blue Jays right now. The righty with the most, Matt Chapman. Bo Bichette in second, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. tied with him. They each had 24, Matt Chapman 26. Matt Chapman's got some juice that way. So I think that he's probably, like, we'll see how often he clears the wall, but I think he's liable to clank a few balls off of it.
Walk here too. It wouldn't be, like, he's one of the best free agents potentially, non-Shohei Ohtani division for next offseason. So it's going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do in that final season under contract with the Blue Jays, but they've got him for 162 more games plus the playoffs. So a lot of time before we start talking too much about, you know, whatever analogy Scott Boras comes up for Chapman.
All right. I think we hit on all of it. Anything that we missed? Oh, Bo Bichette arbitration case. Any thoughts there, Ben? We should probably touch on that at least a little bit. Well, what do you think about what's happening there?
I think there's probably a full discussion to be had on Bo and Vlad and some comps and the whole dynamics, that go on behind the scenes there, because it's a huge discussion for this franchise. In the meantime, my initial thoughts are that A, I'm very curious to hear what Bo Bichette has to say about this process and where he's at with it. B, from the outside, not having heard from Bo Bichette as we record this, I think it's, you know, mostly business as usual. But clearly, Bo Bichette places a high value on the ability that he has and the production that he's delivered and expects to be compensated for that.
Yeah, we don't have enough time to actually really get into this, do we? Maybe we'll do
it. It's a full pod.
It honestly is like a full segment because it is fascinating and there's like a lot of layers to it. I'll say this about it. We'll talk more about it another time. But like the one thing I think is not being discussed enough about the Bo Bichette arbitration case is the impact it is going to have globally in MLB. A lot of discussion about Bo's relationship with the Blue Jays and, you know, what it says about him and all that. Like, if you are Bobby Witt Jr. or O'Neill Cruz or Jeremy Pena, Gunnar Henderson, you are watching this so closely. You are as fascinated as anyone in this because this could be precedent setting, right? Like there could be very real fallout from this if Bo Bichette wins for every shortstop that comes after him who is like a 4-5 win player. This could be a huge standard setting case for star players at a premium position. And the flip side of that is that if Bo Bichette loses, it will suppress the salaries of each of those players that come after him, of your Witts, of your Cruises, of your Bryson Stotts, whoever. If you're a young shortstop in this game, or you're like, you know, a top prospect shortstop coming up, or if you're the Players Association, you really want Bichette to win this. This would raise the tide for all boats to come after him. And if you're a team that doesn't like to spend money, like I mentioned earlier, like if you're the Baltimore Orioles with Gunnar Henderson, if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates with O'Neill Cruz, you really want the Blue Jays to win this, because if they do, it would control costs for management for years to come.
Yeah, for sure. Agree with all that. It's really a big picture thing with the LRD on the MLB side and the Players Association. These have wide reaching consequences. And also, I think you made Bryson Stott's day by lumping him in with the rest of those all-star shortstops.
I was reaching.
I hope he listens. I hope, Bryson, if you're listening, this episode's for you.
I was reaching. I don't know. Is there another good? I was trying to think, like, you know why that was on my mind? Because I watched him with the Phillies in the NL DS and CS last year. And I was like, he's pretty good. Like, he's a good player. And he didn't have the debut that obviously he was hoping to, as I am like quickly looking at the, you know, production last year right now, 84 WRC plus. So yeah, he does not belong in that conversation. But you look at the minor league numbers and you look at what he was able to do on the way up, I would say there is clearly more in that bat, and that he could play his way into that conversation at least.
Great walk-up music too.
Oh yeah. Oh, phenomenal. Oh, yeah. It's another thing that we'll talk about down the line was the atmospheres in Philly and San Diego, by the way, during the playoffs last year, during the postseason. Some of the conversations that, we're going to do a whole segment on this because I had a million thoughts. Just, it was so eye-opening getting to be around other teams and talking to like players and coaches and people, you know, on the staffs there and in that role that I was filling with TV during the playoffs. It gave me great perspective on a lot of things that the Blue Jays are doing and a lot of the conversations that we have about the Blue Jays during the year. So like, let's put a pin in that. But like Arden's observations from the NLDS and LCS last year are going to be something that we're going to have to talk about going forward. Awesome. Lots to talk about.
Let's do it soon.
Lots to talk about this year, Ben. So that's it. That is your first ATL of the ninth season. Thank you so much for listening, for being here with us through all these years. If you're a new listener, if you're a day oneer, we appreciate it. Again, please hit us up with topic ideas, on topic or off topic, baseball or not baseball, on Twitter, Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, via email at theletters@sportsnet.ca. For Ben, for our producer, Christian Ryan, my name is Arden Zwelling, and we will talk to you next time on At The Letters.